Muller House Meeting, Friday afternoon, 24th September 1976. Mankind's paramount and most important problem in the world, especially today, is to live in communion. Not merely talk about it, not merely make plans or raise up organizations for uniting the nations of the world and so forth, but actually to live it. And mankind cannot live in communion unless individuals themselves are in the state of harmony within themselves and therefore offer no obstruction to the realization of communion. I think this morning we began to see that you or I, as separate individuals, cannot live in communion. As separate individuals. Because as long as this consciousness of oneself as a separate person, isolated from the rest of the world, is strong in us, we cannot bridge over. The bridging over demands that no self-consciousness shall cut us off from complete relationship with everyone, everything, every situation, event, and circumstance around us. Furthermore, you and I directly cannot live in communion as a communion of two people. Each one of us is completely interdependent with the rest of the world. This is a fact of nature. We cannot deny it. Our difficulty is that we do deny it because we don't see it with sufficient clarity of mind and intensity of heart. If those are there, then we can at least prepare the way for living in communion. But the fact remains that each one of us is rooted in a great whole, the totality, the entire universe, not merely the little bit of it that we can see and understand and know, but the whole of existence in its immensity, in its incalculable, immeasurable immensity. We are rooted in it. And because we are rooted in the whole, we are, in a sense, safe. We are contained within that which will everlastingly hold us. If, therefore, we can establish, we can make real our state of communion in terms of harmony within ourselves and in relationship with the world as a whole, then you and I, as different, unique individuals, can also be in constant communion. It is very important to realize this, because when we do realize it, our self-conceit, our pride, our separativeness, and with it all our ambitions and conflicts and dualisms, they all begin to dissolve. And the wholeness, the totality, the holiness of existence contains us, and we are in relationship with it. And that means that what mankind has called God or Brahman or the infinite or the absolute is the very source, the very substance, and indeed the very goal of our particular separate existence. You know, it's such a wonderful thing that these profound truths unconsciously are expressed by human beings. Take, for example, this beautiful greeting which is given by one person to another as we walk over these paths and roads from one place to another. Grüß Gott. I trust I am not mispronouncing the words. Grüß Gott. God is greeting you. One human being says to another human being, God is greeting you. And he gives the same answer, Grüß Gott. God is greeting you. Are you God? Am I God? When you and I greet each other like that? Yes, indeed we are. We are that in potentiality. We recognize unconsciously our divine potency in us. The divine, the transcendent embodied in us. The whole of each one of us is transcendence itself embodied, made concrete, the concretest expression of transcendence. But we are not yet awake to the fact in our whole nature. And yet, unconsciously, we greet each other in that way. God is greeting God. Does not this imply and actually mean the state in which one is living in communion, in harmony, in unity, recognizing the unity of the universe? Now that is the potentiality. But the actuality happens to be not completely in line, in rhythm, in tune with the potentiality. So we must inquire, what is it in ourselves that obstructs this supreme fulfillment, which gives us the right to call ourselves truly human? What is it that obstructs us? Let us consider our own constitution. How are we constituted? This morning we had some sort of touch with nature in its totality. We began to see that the atoms, the energies, electrical, chemical, and other energies which constitute us also constitute everything else. There is but one primordial, original, creative energy which becomes this extraordinarily varied universe. A wonderfully, richly varied universe. The whole universe, if you like, is our Garden of Eden. And remember that Eden, the name Eden, means delight, joy, bliss. And it is the product of this one ultimate creative energy manifesting itself in innumerable ways, countless ways. So we began to sense, to wake up to the fact that what we call our body is really of the same substance as the body of the whole universe. How can there be, why should there be, any conflict between the world and ourselves? Why should there be enmity? And if we realize that there can only be relationship and there should be only harmony, then would we not naturally and spontaneously cease to exploit nature? What do we ordinarily do? We do all the things that make us say with satanic pride that we are conquering nature. How absurd we are. Nature brought us into being. The earth brought us into being. The earth sustains us and holds us and never strikes back at us. She sustains us silently, and silently and uncomplainingly she takes the whole of us back into herself when this organism is dead. But we never learn from that. We say we are conquering nature. We are trampling upon our Mother Earth. We are tearing her bowels out for satisfying our greeds, our ambitions, our lust for sensations and power and pleasure and all the rest of it. And we have no sense, or very little sense, that this thing, Mother Nature, Mother Earth, which is really the bride of God, if you like to put it that way, just holds us, sustains us, nourishes us, whatever we do to her. You may say, yes, but afterwards we do pay a penalty with illness, with death, and so forth. But it is not Mother Nature which inflicts the punishment. It comes from within ourselves, because whatsoever we think or feel or do or say makes an impression inside us on our brains and nervous system and the whole organism. And these are energies which work from within. We can't avoid it. There is no need of an external judge and a jury to sentence us for our sins. The sentence is pronounced by ourselves because it is written within us and it works as so many energies, electrical, chemical and other energies, inside our own bodies. So now, we have to form a right relationship with nature. We then are the product of Mother Earth, of this primordial creative energy. But let us not imagine, when I talk like this, that all our existence can be explained in terms of chemistry and physics and biology and so forth. It certainly can't. That is merely the external skin of it only. Because when we say body, we don't really know all about the body. What does the body imply? We say body, and usually we mean that it is not mind. We say mind, and we usually mean it is not body. Is that true? Or is the truth one extraordinary integrated totality of so many particulars, different finite particulars, which make the wholeness, and our poor brains and our little consciousness cannot grasp it? It's too great, it's too marvelous. Who will penetrate and unravel the mystery of God and creation? I can't do it, can you? But if we begin to see even one little ray of truth, one shining ray, isn't it extraordinary how one ray can light up the whole sky, the whole world? If we can light up in any one way, we light up in so many other ways also from within. So now, when we say body, let us realize that we are also saying at the same time, mind, spirit, consciousness, everything. Have you ever met a living body walking up the stairs to come and meet you, which had no mind? Or have you ever seen a mind floating about in space without any body? No. It is one great wholeness. We are made that way. And just as we talk in terms of the substance of the body being the one substance of the whole universe, and we talk like that because our little knowledge of chemistry and electricity and so forth makes us talk like that, we can also make a concession to our littleness and our ignorance and say that our minds, what we call our minds, are part and parcel of the universal mind, the one mind, the mind of God, if you like. The mind of God, which is free of thoughts and shapes and forms, which is free of ideas, because all ideas and thoughts are limited, particular, they are mortal, they are not the whole truth. The truth is beyond all ideas and shapes and beliefs and forms. But all beliefs and shapes and forms are thrown out by this creative activity of the empty, the universal mind, which is the source of all creation, the emptiness which is the whole plenitude. So only for convenience, we will talk of the mind as being different from the body, just for convenience, so that we can begin to understand what is there in us which obstructs the state of communion. This universal mind is only another expression of the one creative energy, just as universal matter, substance, this body, that body, everybody is a different expression of the one universal matter. It's convenient, just convenient, to talk of matter and mind. It's all one actually, one creative energy. All right. Now, creative energy as mind meets body, comes together with body, and gives rise to what we call psyche. Psyche, the soul. Supposing this body had no brain, no nervous system, no ductless glands, it would have no psyche, no human psyche. When each person is conceived by his father and mother, that original cell, has a blueprint, a sort of a plan. And the child that will be born will bear the impression of that blueprint. And that blueprint is always different for each and every single human being in the world. Think of the infinite depth and creative newness and variety of the Absolute, of the Eternal. How extraordinary. Every single thing is different. Every single creature is different like that. Never two the same. So each one of us comes bearing that imprint in the cell. And this mind, this one universal mind, which has no characteristics as we understand them, interacting with your brain and nervous system and ductless glands and so forth, manifests mind in your particular manner. Your particular thoughts, feelings, urges and so forth, your own psyche, as we call it, is the result of this. Now, we'll begin to see a little bit of light. Mind is universal, total, absolute. Time and space don't affect it. Each one of us displays a psyche and psychical phenomena which are different from everybody else's. They have, of course, certain basic resemblances, just as with the body. Everybody in the world feels hunger and eats food to satisfy the hunger. That's universal. There is no difference. So there are certain basic similar things. But in the working out of the details, there is this wonderful infinite variety and difference. And this is psyche. And do remember that psyche is rooted in the physical brain and nervous system, and particularly the activity of the ductless glands. So this makes for psyche and the different and particular manifestation of mind through each one of us. But now consider this other aspect, consciousness. Man has consciousness, displays consciousness in a manner which completely differentiates him from the rest of the animal world. There is nothing on this earth anyway, this planet, the earth, no living creature which displays consciousness with the range, the intensity, the depth, the sensitivity, and all the possibilities that lie before human beings as consciousness does in man. An animal's consciousness is very, very restricted in comparison with ours. But this is our individual problem. We start in the state of ignorance. Now I'm using the word ignorance in a specialized way. Ignorance ordinarily means something like this. If you go to school and you learn how to swim, but don't learn arithmetic, well, you'll be ignorant of arithmetic. You don't know arithmetic. But you can acquire the knowledge of arithmetic, or you can acquire the knowledge of geography and so forth. And then you say, I'm not ignorant of mathematics or science or geography or whatever it is. But where our human existence and functioning is concerned, I'm using the word ignorance in this sense, that we are not awake. We are not alive to the fact that we are part and parcel of this whole universe and how we function. We are in an unenlightened state. We are in a state of darkness. A state of darkness because, being unawake, we are shut in upon ourselves. We are self-enclosed. And this is how we function. And this is why we are not truly human. We are only subhuman. The whole of the animal world lives in that manner, self-enclosed upon itself, each animal. Note carefully, what are the animal's primary concerns? What we call its natural drives. And its natural drives are directed towards the perpetuation of itself until suddenly death overwhelms it. No animal can contemplate or foresee death for itself. It sees a dead body and knows it is not like a living body, but it doesn't know that it itself will one day die. You and I can contemplate our own death. See? Now, so an animal is concerned with self-perpetuation and with the perpetuation of the species. Roughly, food and sex are its preoccupations, are its whole duty. And it does them all naturally and spontaneously. There are only rather rare examples of rape, for example, in the animal world. Whereas in the human world, this is quite a possibility, and unfortunately an actuality. In the animal world, it isn't. The animal lives in tune with the laws of nature. But the animal cannot consciously say, no, I'm not going to live in tune with this law of nature. I'm going to experiment this way and find out for myself. That is what you and I can do. So now you see, the animal doesn't know consciously, as you and I can know, that it is part and parcel of this extraordinary whole. So the animal lives confined unto itself. Its psychical, its mental processes are confined to itself, and its immediate interrelationships with the situation around it. But you and I, in mind and consciousness, can move, and nowadays not only in mind and consciousness, but even bodily, move away from this earth, out into space, to the uttermost ends of the universe, and discover things about this marvelous universe. We can enter into the realms of pure consciousness and mind as no animal can possibly enter or even dream of. Totally impossible. You and I can do that. So, our ignorance really means, for us as human beings, our state of being unawake to our complete and total interrelationship, our interaction and our interdependence with the whole universe. Now this is the root source of the obstruction which we, in our unawakened state, our ignorant state, offer to the realization of communion. So long as we are like this, it is not possible to be in communion. Now we must remember that communion cannot be forced upon us. Do you know one extraordinary thing, extraordinary reality about what we call God or transcendence or the Absolute? We say God is omnipotent. Is all-powerful, absolute power, and omniscient, absolute knowledge, and so forth. But have you noticed, if you've looked sufficiently deeply, God never compels. Never forces you to grow, to open out to your fullness. The potentiality, the possibility is God given as a gift. It is your responsibility, it is my responsibility. Like a gardener who looks after his trees and his flowers and so on, to bring that potentiality to fulfillment. Otherwise, what would be the use? What would be the purpose? How absurd if God compelled us to be perfect human beings all the time. The whole point, the extraordinary thing about us humans is that we have the power to choose good or evil. We have the power. Now, if we have the power and we are to be compelled from outside, what is the use of giving us such a power? We are not going to demonstrate in the world this marvelous new creation on this planet by this supreme creative energy in terms of full humanity. Full humanity. And humanity doesn't mean just kindness or anything like that. The word human, from its original roots in the Sanskrit language, means the happy creator, the blissful creator. Man means to create, not merely to think, but to create. That's what man means. And hu means happy, blissful, at peace. That is what the human being is. And that is what humanity is for. If we understand this, we will understand how and why, through the ages, in all the great religions, God is called the Creator. God is called the Blissful One. He's not merely the giver of everything. He is giver insofar as through the act of creation, Himself has come into manifestation through you. We are God-given creations, if you like. We are, if you want to use Buddhistic terminology, mind creations. The absolute mind, the supreme mind, the perfect infinite mind. It's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? Now, we must not approach this and treat this as, a system of thought or a particular philosophy. That is a mistake. Philosophy, especially unfortunately nowadays, is the plaything of the intellect. Just as if we are fond of games, if we are naturally athletic, we play games and enjoy ourselves. If we are artistically inclined, we play a piano or paint pictures and enjoy ourselves. And, of course, incidentally, give happiness to others also, and so forth. And your scientist, he wants to understand the nature of things and how things function and work, so he investigates according to the scientific method, which is one of the most important methods that there is as such, and he enjoys himself discovering things about nature. And the philosopher enjoys the sheer exercise of abstract intellectual thought. And he builds up a system of thought and feels pleased about it. But where the mistake comes is to imagine that this is truth. Truth in its wholeness, in its living reality, is not in the manifestation, the concrete manifestation, either bodily or intellectually or aesthetically. These are all outpourings, throwing out by the infinite, eternal, creative energy. But we make the mistake of thinking this is truth. No. This is a picture of truth. If a man and a woman are deeply in love with each other and want to marry, they cannot marry the photograph of the beloved, can they? The picture of the beloved cannot, you cannot be in union with the picture of the beloved. You have to have the living beloved. This is how it is. And it is that sense of livingness that is rather short in us. We are not awake to that extent. We are so imprisoned by things, by circumstances, and with our particular desires and ambitions and fears and so on interacting with them, that we are suddenly blind to the living reality. Now, we have to awake to this livingness. The living thing is healthy. It is mature. It is whole. It is capable. It is quite extraordinary, the living thing, whatever it is. But are we all this as we are? What are the obstructions in the way? Our ignorance, as I said, to start with. And I trust we have some sort of general understanding of what is meant by ignorance in this context. our ignorance to start with. And the psyche particularly lives therefore in a state of illusion. And its activities are to a very large degree, unfortunately too large a degree, rooted in our fear, our greed, our resentments, our ambitions, our envies, our jealousies, and all the rest of it. But the roots are there. Greed, fear, resentment, anger, hate, these are the destructive things. Not that destruction doesn't take place. I personally don't very much like the word destruction, because it is too much associated with a senseless breaking up, a breaking up which denies fulfillment and fruition. Instead of destruction, I would like to say a dissolution which leads to a transformation, which emerges out in another form. Because what is it that you can annihilate? You can't annihilate anything in the universe. You can't throw anything out of the universe. If you dislike something, if you find anything which is disagreeable, well, you may, as you say, throw it outside. But all right, outside my window means it's fallen into somebody else's garden. I haven't thrown it out of the universe. You can't do it. You can only transform it. And it is the same with our psychical activities. Our psychical activities take these shapes and forms in terms of fear and violence and so forth, which are a denial of what the psyche really should be and how it should function. They are a denial. Therefore, we have first to observe the way in which the psyche functions. You know how Jesus said, "Watch and pray, for ye know neither the hour nor the day when the Son of Man cometh." The man, remember, is derived from the word which means mind, the son of mind. Very important to remember that. Watch. But what do you watch? The traffic at Rheims Airport? You watch the processes that go on in your own brain without a stop, day and night. Watch that. The reactions that spring up to every single stimulus that comes to us from outside through our senses, that arises within us through our experience, our memories, our desires, our natural urges, and so on. Watch those. And as you watch, do remember to watch peacefully and quietly. Because if you watch and pronounce judgments, "Oh, this is bad," you will say, "Get rid of it." But you can't. It is part of yourself. It is part of your own living psyche functioning that way. You can't perform an operation on the psyche like you can perform an operation and take out one kidney because it is got into such a bad state. You can't do it with the psyche. The psyche functions as a whole all the time. In the act of watching, without pronouncing condemnation and without pronouncing approval, you heal the psyche. If you approve of what is going on in the psyche, your feelings and your thoughts, then you will suffer from pride and conceit. And you will close your mind towards further knowledge, deeper insight. This is a very important point to bear in mind. So, just observe exactly what it is and be very alert and watchful. And if it is something which calls for disapproval, which is obviously wrong or evil, then don't condemn it. Because if you condemn it, you can't heal it. If I am ill and I go to a doctor, and if the doctor asks me, what have I done to get ill like this, and I tell him, and he condemns me for my foolishness, for my immorality or whatever it is he likely to give me the best medicine to heal me? You see, the mind gets biased, it gets prejudiced, it gets twisted. But it is the mind which is completely open, and therefore the heart which is completely open, which will enable wisdom and love in their profoundest reality to function together and heal the psyche. So you don't throw out anything which is ill. You don't try to overcome evil, fight against evil. Remember, Jesus said, resist not evil. You see? And this way there is healing, there is whole making, health, and the psyche becomes, you may be surprised to hear, empty. What is the content of our consciousness? So many beliefs, ideas, convictions, and so on. Yes, of course. All through our life, we are bound to have beliefs and ideas and convictions and so on. But the mistake we make is to hold on to them hard and say, ah, I believe this. All right, it may be true, it may not be true. But am I so conceited as to say, imagine that this is the whole truth? If it is the whole, if I imagine that and I cling to it, then I have closed my mind to growing. My mind cannot grow. I will never realize mental maturity. The mind will be an ill mind, a stiff mind. You know how in the Old Testament the Lord God tells the Israelites, you are a stiff-necked people. That's what he tells them. You are a stiff-necked people. What does that mean? They are not flexible. Their minds are closed minds. This is the system. This is the method. This is the ultimate truth. There is no other truth to discover. But what a conceit. So you see, neither approval nor disapproval. It's complete openness. And when there is such watchfulness, then you discover that what we call fear or hate or greed, all these are one's own self. And in seeing that perfectly clearly, the dissolution of that psychical pattern takes place, and the psyche becomes empty of all these ill patterns. In other words, the mind gets cleansed of dirt. What happens then? All the impressions that come to us through the senses are no longer twisted, or distorted by the conditioned psyche. If the psyche is empty, what has happened is that your psyche or my psyche has now become completely at one with pure universal mind, which is the divine mind, the creative mind, the faultless mind, the omniscient mind. And then mind in its totality directly functions through all your senses. Have you ever known what it is like to see through eyes which are the instruments of the divine itself looking at its own creation? Then you will know what it means to be man. The first chapter of Genesis, and Elohim said, let us make man in our own image, our own living image. It is God, it is transcendence looking through your eyes, listening through your ears. And do you think that that looking and listening will have any sort of relationship with the way we look and listen now? Everything we see and hear now, we see and hear with desire, with the passion to grasp, or with aversion and wanting to cast it aside and so forth. Then we shall look and listen divinely. And in that, there is no problem about the acceptance of the totality. No problem about being in communion.